is tape 5, side A, Senate Revenue Committee Agenda, January 22nd, 1981, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room 137, State Capitol Building. Orientation, Personal Income Tax, Ron Chastain, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office. Corporate Excise Tax, Ron Chastain, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office.
We have Ron Chastain will talk about income tax. Okay, I want to finish about 2:30 if we can. Dr. Chastain, if we could try to keep this to about a one-hour presentation, and we'll try to keep moving right through it.
I think we'll be able to make that just,
okay.
Just fine. So that was the intent here. Well, I'm Ron Chastain. I'll be your staff person working on the personal income tax bills, and corporate tax bills, and your school finance bills when they come in.
Our condolences.
Yes. Yeah.
I think Richard
was later.
Mad at me. I asked him if they were mad at me or something. This is the way it happened this year.
For those members who do not realize, the staff rotates through these different areas each year.
Oh, that's good.
And it leads to a doctorate, as Dr. Chastain is, as you know. But they do that, I'm sure, for many reasons, including so that they do not become advocates of their own, and also for their own
experience,
which is good.
Invariably happens when we talk to somebody about one tax area, and they'll ask a question of property tax or timber. Richard wanted us all to be grounded in all the topics. But sometimes you lose some continuity this way, too. There are some costs that I've been arguing that, you know, that I didn't work in all the bills last session. We're trying to. I use that as an excuse for a few of the things that you will be asking me at times. I will be relying on tax attorneys. We've got Barbara Seymour and Ira Jones that will work with this committee some, and the auditors from the Department of Revenue.
Yeah.
So I'll take off here.
Well,
before I get up to the board. First thing I wanted to, as most of you know, well, I think you all know how important the income tax is to the general fund. I was looking at the governor's proposed budget and saw that the personal income tax is accounting for 75.5% of the general fund this biennium, and your corporate tax is like 10.4%. So it's 75.5 and 10. But the budget also has the last two bienniums, and so I wanted to see. I thought that had changed some, the personal income tax. And indeed it had.
Excuse me, Ron, are you including in that 10% the increase in the corporate?
Yes.
The proposed
the
increase?
This is the governor's proposed budget. 75.5 and 10. Whereas the last biennium was 72 and 12. And the biennium before that was 69 and 13. So you've got a gradual.
Senator Day.
Am I correct? I seem to have the figure, and I just want to, as I recall, if we take basic school, the property tax relief, tie the two together, that accounts for, what, 56 cents on every income tax dollar. Is that accurate?
It sounds about right.
Pretty close.
They say half the general fund is going back.
It's over half, and if we took education per se and added higher education, I think it goes up to about 75. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. That sounds reasonable.
In the federal budget, as I recall listening to the new administration people talk, in excess of 70% of the federal budgets is in fixed appropriations and fixed programs, just automatic checks that are written, and they only have control over, I believe it was less than 20, or right at 20%, or less than 20% of the proposed budget.
I think they may change that.
Yeah.
That's my partisan needle for the day.
They will not change the percentage. They will change the programs inside that percentage.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, that's all I wanted to say on the relative magnitudes, just that personal income tax seems to be growing a little bit, and the corporate tax is decreasing a little bit over the last couple of biennials. Just on the basics, what we're doing is personal income tax. Oregon starts with a federal tax form. And a lot of people heard this before, be brief. You have a tax on income, you'd like to perhaps tax all income. We really don't. You start off with the definition of income, broadly conceived, everything, all everything coming in. And there are exclusions that are made at the federal level. until they get down to a gross income. Now, these exclusions can be things like sick pay, military, severance pay, gifts, some scholarships. There's other income that isn't counted, such as capital gains. There's capital gains income that's excluded. Dividend exclusions. If you have dividends, that is $100 for individual or $200 for joint returns, just ignore it. So you come from that broad income down to the exclusions of your gross income. Then you subtract out your deductions and exemptions. You have standard deductions, say so much for, standard deduction is supposed to be an approximation of all the itemized deductions that other people take. That's close. Personal exemptions, you subtract those out, you come up with a taxable balance. Taxable balance is what you apply the tax rates to. And usually the taxable balance, as you see in our statistics later, is about half of your gross income. Maybe a little bit more than half.
Wow.
You're cutting out a lot.
Something's wrong with my place. Is that right?
Well, I'll show you. Maybe 60%.
I can show you the...
We'll get to those tables here a little better. But as a rule of thumb, you're getting coming down close to half.
If you keep having kids, you'll come out all right.
I guess. Okay.
So you get that taxable balance, and you apply the average tax rate, depending on where you fall. So all those income tax tables are built on taxable balance, not adjusted gross income. Then you come up to your gross taxes due, to which you subtract out any tax credits, and you have your net taxes due. That's the way the federal reform works. Oregon pops in and says, we're going to start with the federal... their definition of adjusted gross income. And then Oregon said, we're going to add some things, add back some income, such as corrections on earlier federal tax returns. Oregon says, we're not going to allow an exclusion for interest paid from other states' bonds. So, feds allow that, but we aren't going to allow it. So we add interest for other state bonds back here. We also have some subtractions. Oregon can't tax, so let us see. There are certain things Oregon cannot tax. Think of these interest in federal bonds. There's other things Oregon. As you're seeing, look at the return here. I should look at it. Well, federal tax. Oregon doesn't tax them. They allow a federal tax subtraction. Anyway, we make additions and subtractions. You come down to our own taxable balance. Then we apply our tax rate to it, and then we apply our own tax credits to come up with the net taxes due. You've got in your folder, you've got a copy of the tax forms. It's just in case a question came up, I wanted you to have those available. You see the additions and subtractions. We've got a research report.
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
Something that came to mind. I haven't had a chance to really look it over when we are now requiring businesses to file an estimated income tax now. And I've had more complaints about that form being confusing. I so hope someday we get the Department of Revenue over here and take a look at it. I don't know whether the rest of you, but I know Senator Simmons mentioned to me he caught them in the fact that they made some errors in the form, and I hadn't really had a chance to talk to him. But I've had complaints from a few people, and we may want to look at it later. Mr. Chair.
Well, this committee has tried with some success and with growing success in getting the department to bring their forms to us. And at times we almost had to strong arm them in order to do that. But I think there has been improvement since the committee has tried to provide oversight, particularly in the area of simplification and making them understandable. Because sometimes those people over there who know the system so well assume.
Yeah, they take for granted that the average Joe Doe does.
Yeah. And so, We'll do that and try to get all of those forms before the committee. And we wanted to carry that on in the interim, and I don't know why the interim process was not part of that. You see, the forms are already in print, and that's the trouble we've had. We meet at an awkward time to be a part of it.
I just thought maybe if others had, it'd be interesting to have them explain, because it is new. As you know, yes. We made that change.
I received one, but I've not had time to look at it. So.
I think they're getting those forms off to the printers in October. They're doing all this about the time the interim committees are winding down.
Yeah. Anyway, if we can in the future, I'd appreciate it.
what's your name, the one issue that had come up before was it not having all the tax credits on the short form. Some of the reason I wanted you to have the short form here, that on the back you see all the tax credits.
They are there?
They're listed there.
Which one is that?
40S.
Okay.
40S return.
Yeah.
For a while, there was a problem where you couldn't, people that use the short form were not able to, it was political contributions. Yeah.
And that's a result of our committee's direct interference in their business.
You do good work. I think you ought to interfere regularly.
We just felt that if the legislature is going to provide these benefits, such as weatherization, people who file the short form, which is a majority, isn't it not, should have access to them just as well as people who file long form.
Okay. All right. I didn't want to get you inundated in paper here, but I'm going to make references to research reports that I have copies of and make available to anybody that would like them. One, it's written by Jim Scherzinger when he did the personal income tax last time. And it was called the Oregon Personal Income Tax since 1969. I was going to very briefly just give you a little bit of background as to why we're doing things the way we are on our income tax. Prior to 1969, Oregon had their own income tax law. They weren't tied to the federal code. In 1969, the legislature said we will tie in with the federal code. And you can reap the obvious advantages of that. You've got all these federal rules and interpretations and rulings to rely on. CPAs would like it. Well, anyway, Oregon did go into tie into the federal code. Oregon taxable income was based on the federal taxable income. It's not on the gross income or the adjusted gross income that we have now, but actually on what was taxed. That's after deductions and exemptions. So you had problems occurring that whenever the federal government changed the personal exemption or the standard deduction, then that was going to be a revenue loss for Oregon. Well, the legislators recognized that at the time, and what they did is they adjusted the rates to take that into account. No one was fooled. I think where people might have been fooled is when the federal government kept changing it, you know, just like every year or so, they kept bumping up the standard deduction. In the 1971 special session, Oregon broke the link between the state taxable income and any future changes to the federal taxable income. They did this by freezing the basis of Oregon income tax to the 1971 federal law. So we'll freeze to that and not be affected by future federal changes. 1973, there were numerous modifications at the state level. You had the $3,000 federal tax limitation come in. Remember back with the McCall tax plan and revenue-producing acts that were introduced then. There's a political contributions deduction. Actually, that was increased. That did exist from 69. There was medically disadvantaged areas that were considered. Deductions given for that. 1975, the legislature ended the freeze to the 1971 federal law. And they did this by adopting the current definition of federal taxable income. Except, they said we will keep the 1971 standard deduction and take everything else. So they maintained that what we have now, we have a standard deduction for those that don't itemize, which is 13% of adjusted gross income. And there's a minimum of $1,050 and a maximum of $1,500. You can see that on the forms and in the directions. So the legislature said, we'll keep that. And the feds went ahead and changed it again. I mean, they went 15 and 16%. But we froze the personal exemption and the standard deduction. In doing that complicated the form somewhat because they had to. Since you're working off the federal adjusted gross income, you needed a lot of additions and subtractions, but still, you know, it's probably an improvement. Also in 1975, you had a $5,000 federal tax limitation. The $3,000 was increased to $5,000. You had a $25 and $50 political contributions credit. 1977, there were some federal changes in the Federal Tax Reform Act of 76 and the Federal Tax Reduction and Simplification Act of 1977, which a lot of people say is a misnomer that didn't simplify things much at all. But anyway, the feds made the changes. Oregon had to react to some of these. There was a change in the federal child care deduction. It was replaced by a credit. We've gone to a credit where we take Oregon's child care credit as a percentage of the federal tax credit. Same, there was a change for the federal retirement income credit, which became a credit for the elderly. One big thing was the feds scrapped the standard deduction, the notion of a standard deduction, and replaced it by new jargon. They call it the zero bracket amount. It was 1977, where It has the same effect as a standard deduction. They're just saying the first $3,200 for joint return is not going to be taxed. It's at a zero dollar amount. I'll expand on that if anyone wants to, or I'll just, if that's familiar to you. I just want you to know there's not a federal tax, a federal standard deduction. There's now a federal zero bracket amount. We still have a standard deduction.
But they equate essentially to the same thing.
That's right. Okay. The amount of income that's taxed starts at your $3,200, and I think 22 or 24 at that time for the feds. We had some new subtractions. We allowed a subtraction for adoption expenses that weren't otherwise deductible. We allowed subtractions of some construction commuting expenses. We allowed some new exemptions, such as Indian income earned on Indian land, and a few new credits. This is in 77 we're talking about here. The weatherization credit, where you get 25% of up to $125 weatherization expenses. There's a crop gleaning credit, a lagging areas credit, an alternative energy device credit, a jobs tax credit. I've also got a list in here of these credits and a brief explanation for you and kind of a first guess estimate, which is really supplied by the Department of Revenue, the report that they had done. And we also modified the pollution control credit, extended it to 1988, and a few other changes. Just trying to hit some of the high points here. The 79 session, as part of your legislative tax plan, the federal tax deduction limitation was increased from $5,000 to $7,000. The personal exemption was increased from the $750 up to $1,000. You recall, it's to be indexed by the CPI. Actually, that would be starting this year when you fill out taxes next year. Next April, you'd have an indexed personal exemption. And as you probably know, we get to talking about the governor's proposal, but that's something there's a proposal to change that.
Now, this coming April, the first index would apply.
No.
It'd be a year from April.
That's right.
So that if that change was made, it wouldn't foul up the forms and that sort of thing.
That's right. Right now, these are the forms that you will all be using to fill out your income taxes this time from 1980 income, and still $1,000.
Yes.
So it'll be the following. Let's see. So there are those two main changes as part of the tax plan, personal exemption and the federal tax deduction. You made modifications to the medically disadvantaged areas law. You modified the tax credit for alternative energy devices. You allowed artists to deduct fair market values of donated art objects. You allowed a tax credit for geothermal hookups, tax credit for reforestation of underproductive forest land, credit for supporting elderly persons that were liable to enter a nursing home. Modified and extended the crop gleaning credit. Commuting expenses for fallers and buckers, additional exemptions for the severely disabled, and a tax credit for energy conservation facilities. That all sounds like quite a bit. You'll see when we look at some of these computer printouts that your tax credits, at least for 1979, amounted to about $15 million in total out of $780 million of total revenue. I'm not trying to cause any despair when I mention all these printouts. I don't plan on spending a whole lot of detail for all these. There's a few key points I want to point out. I saw an article in the local newspaper about all the computer printouts that legislators are being inundated with. I'm sensitive to that. There are a few bits of worthwhile information.
That's kind of like the dentist who's giving you a shot. He's sensitive to the pain, but he's going to do it anyway.
Well, that's...
The thing is,
you were supposed to pick
the
that
quality
up.
Of his handouts and the size is so much different than what we normally get.
It's... Thank you.
There have been two or three things in the paper we felt sensitive to.
Yeah. He didn't say which way to go. He just said,
well. I'm not going to, no. I wanted to talk about the recent federal changes. Ties in with this chart up here. When the federal government makes a change, sometimes if they make a change up here in exclusions, it affects federal adjusted gross income, and that affects Oregon's income. Whereas if they make changes, if they increase the tax credits, that's not really going to affect us very much. The Windfall Profits Act of 1980, which is already law and going into effect this year, allowed an increase in the dividend exclusion and also extended that to the interest exclusion. So right off the top, this year, people can deduct $200 for single returns or $400 of joint returns for interest and dividends, one or the other. And that's, it's hard to say just yet exactly what the impact is going to be on Oregon. It's probably the magnitude of about $10 million for buying this interest exclusion. That's first guess estimate.
An increase.
A decrease
in our revenue?
Yes.
Even though that will actually increase their income, from our point of view.
Yeah, it decreases the federal tax.
Oh, I see, because we automatically adopted that in our code. Okay, I'm sorry.
Unless you make a change, say this is going to be a modification to Oregon law.
That's right. We were overrun. Or they went around the end, because we did not do that last time. That proposal was before the committee, and it was at the end, and the revenue was not there to do away with it.
Let me ask you, is that figured in the governor's budget, to your knowledge? Have they figured that?
I think it probably is. I talked to Paul Ager.
Would you check on that for us?
I will. I mentioned to him once, and I got the impression that maybe he hadn't thought about it, and I told him I thought it might be in the $10 million category.
I have had a presentation on the budget twice now, and I have not had that mentioned. Okay?
Okay.
I've also had mentioned, while we're at it, if we may, Mr. Chairman, that we're looking at a tax cut in general, as you know.
Right.
I understand they have cranked that into the budget. I was told once they have it, now they have. Now,
the federal income tax?
Yeah. Reduction.
I doubt it, but I don't know.
I heard they did.
And I have too. I've heard conflicting reports. Now, Ken and I think we heard that they had not, but I have been told, and I think that would be helpful, Mr. Chair, if I may, that we look at these as we go along and tick them off, and we have knowledge basically is in the budget or isn't it, because that just furthers our concern of what necessarily what we can budget and what we can raise. We've got to know that. This is one I hadn't heard about. This one is a new one.
Well, I think the main point for us to get out of this meeting today is that many proposals are going to go before Congress this spring that will affect the federal tax laws,
right,
which in turn will affect our system and our structure, because we are tied directly to it. And even if we're not, fluctuations there can sometimes ripple through our system. So it is going to be important that number one, we know what their budget analysts put in there, what they're projecting, so that can be monitored as we go along too, because we should have an idea sometime this spring as to at least the probability of some of that stuff flying.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if it doesn't make sense for us to think about maybe severing our ties as closely as they are to the federal government. They budget on an annual basis, we budget on a biennial basis, and they could change what they do really dramatically.
I was thinking the same thought. We may want to look at how we can at least freeze the status quo, and if changes are made, it isn't necessarily an automatic decrease. We may have to look at that.
The only problem is that some of what they're considering would mean an increase, but that wouldn't affect probably whether or not we were tied to them, would it, Ron? That is, if they, in effect, lowered the federal tax liability of taxpayers in Oregon, Oregon would still receive an increase, even though we were not tied directly to their code, wouldn't we? We would still benefit.
Sure, if we want to define it and say we're still going to, not tied to the code, but you're going to use that figure off their tax return.
Yes.
You're going to use their adjusted gross income or whatever.
We could
write it.
Or their taxes.
And we can look at the fact of freezing the status quo. If they made any change either way, we'd have to make the alteration. And we could live with that, because then you're getting at least a fixed.
Let's not be tied automatically. Let's have some flexibility.
Well, we'll look at that issue. It may be more complex. I mean, there were reasons for doing it, and I think many good reasons. And so we'll want to weigh those before we make any commitments. Senator McFarland?
I'd like to go back. Now tell me again how much your projected loss to Oregon's income is for the new 200-400 exemption for interest income. 11 million?
I said the magnitude of 10 million for a biennium.
Okay.
And that's
for a biennium.
That's for a biennium. I think that's on the interest. I think maybe another 3 or 4 million on the dividend exclusion.
Ron,
it's really difficult to, you know, well, I'll let you ask your question.
Does that go into effect for this year?
Yep.
1980, yes.
So that interest earned during 1980 is the first 200 on a single and 400 on a joint return is not taxable?
Yes, certain types of income. There are certain types of interest. There's your interest from a bank, savings account, credit union, that's what they're talking about.
Is exempt, yes.
I think if you had interest on a mortgage that you were holding for a house, but
yes. That doesn't count.
That's not going to count.
Okay.
And if you look at our statistics, it includes all interest. So somehow we've got to clean that out.
Yeah.
And say,
it's hard for you to segment that.
That's right.
And what's the present dividend exclusion now?
Well, it was 100 and 200 for joint.
Okay.
And now it's 200 and 400.
400.
But it's combined with interest and dividends now. So
in other words, you put the whole thing together, but for a joint return, you can only get 400 on interest and dividend.
That's correct.
And as we understand it, pardon Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
As we understand it, that feature, you're fairly certain, has not been cranked in the revenue estimates of the governor's budget.
Actually, I suspect it is. I think it is, because I made a point of mentioning it to Paul Ager. And I talked to him at one time, and he knows about the windfall profits tax bill. So I would suspect that he
has included. But you are
going to find out. I will find out. All of you may not know that. Or maybe you do know that Paul Ager does make the personal and corporate estimates for the state. When we make estimates here to any changes in the law, we're trying to tie into those estimates, to you know, the official estimate for the state of Oregon. We aren't second guessing him. We're trying to use his growth rates, his base. And,
I was a little off the last time. But
Senator Monroe.
There's the loss is not quite as great as it would ordinarily seem from this. Isn't that true? Because in that their federal income tax liability is reduced to a greater extent than their state income tax liability, because our tax rates are less. The federal exemption for the federal income tax would be less. We would pick up a little bit of the gross of the initial loss.
That's right.
And isn't it also true that that if there is a tax cut, a federal income tax cut of, the man said it was going to be 10%, but I haven't seen it yet. But if it is 10%, that would create a considerable increase in Oregon tax revenues, wouldn't it?
Well, it will be, yes.
Do you have any estimates as to what the increase would be?
No, but I could crank some through here in a little bit.
Of course, it depends to a large degree on when that would take effect, whether they would make that retroactive to 1981 or...
That's right. January.
I'd be interested in knowing, especially as we get more of an indication from the new administration as to approximately what that tax cut will be. I'd be interested in knowing how that's going to impact our revenue figures.
And I know you're going to have Paul Ager in here.
Senator Farland?
This was my question. Either you or the other young man, did you not tell us that the anticipation of a 5% cut was cranked into our considerations, right?
That's what I'd heard. Yeah,
somebody told us.
It was in his forecast, yeah.
Yeah, told us that they had cranked in a 5%. The assumption of a 5% cut into the governor's budget.
Yeah, that's what I'm not sure, because I've heard both stories.
Oh, you've heard both of them?
Yes,
too.
And that's what troubles me, because two things I can't quite figure out, because we've had an increase in Social Security taxes. You know, there's been some impact there. We have some impact. What the tax cut he's really talking about is a deacceleration of a tax increase, and I don't know how that effect plays, you follow me, because the tax cut we're really talking about is less implementation of what they've already predicted, and that's what I don't know. Understand how it comes together. Is how are we going to tie those two and understand what are they going to have more money? I'm not sure. I think what they're saying is they aren't going to pay quite as much,
yeah.
And I don't know.
Still may pay more.
That's right.
But
I don't know how that affects our revenue. See, that's the.
It's the same thing we've had to tell our constituents about property tax relief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a decrease in the increase of the rate of increase of.
Right.
Okay.
I wanted to know just a couple of the other bills that are being considered in Congress. The interesting is already passed. There's a H.R. 1053, clever title. That's the 10-year, 5-year, 3-year accelerated depreciation schedules. Jones Conable, I think, is the other congressperson. Want to change the depreciation law to have a 10-year depreciation for buildings, 5 years for equipment, 3 years for cars. When you change the depreciation schedules, that's going to have an effect in Oregon. We're talking about excluded income again here, as you're coming down to what.
That would
what's
probably
really
change it dramatically, would it not?
I don't know. People I've talked to said, "Oh, their revenue estimates back there are wild guesses." But the only way I'm going to get a revenue estimate here is to be tying in with their revenue estimates.
Well,
I would think it would have an effect.
Senator Drinkley,
wouldn't that more or less just affect the corporate income?
Well, it's personal also.
But it would have a more dramatic impact, I would think, on the corporate.
Yes, it will. It will be more in the corporate. But
figures go right up to the maximum rate of 10%. And to answer the chairman's comments about the flattening out, it appears to me there is a rather significant flattening out. For example, if you look in the first bracket of 0 to 10,000, you find a change of some 2.3%, or a better than a 50% increase in the tax rate from 0 up to the 10,000 rate, from 4.3 to 6.6. Whereas you go from the 6.6 to 7.5 between 10,000 and 20,000, or an increase of less than 1 point, or, you know, what, some 15% roughly. And then you go from 20 to 30, and you only increase 0.7 of 1 point. You go from 30 to 40, and you increase 0.5 of 1 point. From 40 to 50, you increase 0.3 of a point. From 50 to 60, 0.2 of a point. So it does significantly flatten out.
It does, but I thought what I was hearing was not that we had simply flattened out that way, but that people had reached a large number of people were reaching a maximum.
And so you get more and more people every year reaching the maximum.
And one of the things that I'm thinking now is perhaps instead of people moving up in the last couple of years, we may have had a lot of people moving down. And that
because of that top.
Well, not necessarily because of the top, but because of the economy. And that people are actually paying on less income. Again, not actual less income, but the rate of growth of income is much less than it has been in the past, and that affects the elasticity or the figures as much as the fact that we're topping out, or that we're going to the incremental increase in the rate is less in the upper income brackets.
But you see, if you take a person, say, at a 40 to 45,000 income, their average tax rate is 8.8. They still only pay a lower rate at for the first 10,000.
Yes.
So it's only the amount between 10,000 and 40,000, or the top 30,000, that they pay the 10% rate on.
That's right.
The first 10,000 they pay a lesser rate on.
But that has always been.
Right.
I mean, that's not new.
But that's why it's virtually impossible to get clear up to the 10%, because you're always paying a lower rate on the first 10,000 and then paying the 10% flat rate. So, you know, there's an awful lot of taxpayers. Well, you know, you'd have to look at everybody except those in the first group. I don't know. He doesn't have totals there, but...
But in comparative terms, that's always been the case.
Everybody from, you know, from here on down on this chart is virtually at the top rate. In other words, the last dollar they pay taxes on is at 10%.
Who's in that category?
Everybody from here on down is at the 10% rate.
$10,000?
Everybody from 10,000 on down is at the 10% rate. From 10,000 on down, adjusted gross income is at the 10% rate.
We might want to move up to get them from the AGI to the taxable balance. I said before the...
Okay, taxable balance.
You see, that's that last column. It shows you 56% is your taxable balance to AGI. So, you know you're paying tax of 56% of the AGI at the 18 to 20.
Do you have figures on what percentage of total taxpayers have a taxable balance of $10,000 and more?
I don't.
I think that's what the chairman is getting at. How many are paying at that top rate?
The data has never been presented, arranged by taxable balance. We're working a computer model using a sample of tax returns. I've been for the last few months. I'm working on it this week, and I hope to be able to get some answers.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see the answer to Senator Powell's question of whether or not there's a higher percentage or a lower percentage of people in that 10,000 plus category since the recessionary period of the last year, whether it went down in the 1980 tax year. I'd love to see those figures.
Are those obtainable? Should be.
Well, I'm not sure. I think I'd be able to get at them with that income tax model. But I'm still learning what I can do with it.
Yeah. Okay.
There's only a few more things. I don't know if you wanted to cut it off or just to finish up these last.
Why don't you go ahead? And
well, table page 4 in this group. I wanted you to see the credits, the individual credits. There will be a lot of debate probably in all the revenue committees about tax credits. This table G, we have more detailed information, but this tells you the total credits for $15.9 million. That's column 3, total credits. You see the big credits are the child care. I'm talking relative terms here, not absolute dollars. Child care credit was only $3 million. Taxes paid to other states were $4.6 million. That's also the foreign tax credits are built into that. Tax paid to other states. Weatherization was about $6 million. Other credits are $1 million. Your political contributions for this year, that was only $716,000. And that fluctuates depending on the election years or not. As we discuss bills for credits and extensions of these credits, I'll be bringing you in more detailed data. On the, let's see, the last two pages, I have included those because those showed relatively clean data for joint full-year taxable returns. I think it's page, well, my page number is off. It's a mess. 5.
Five and six.
Page 5 doesn't.
It didn't print. Did
its
it?
Number this didn't get on it.
It's 2110.
It says 2110 up in the corner.
That's, yeah. Fifth and sixth page.
This doesn't include all these non-taxable or part year or funny returns. It's just showing you everybody that filed a joint return for the full year at taxable income. And I think that sometimes the averages are more meaningful for you. And we don't have to spend any time on this. It's just that if you are curious about it. A big chunk of the taxpaying population, that's 475,000 returns there. For these taxpayers, your average income was $24,700. That probably sounds more reasonable to you than some of the earlier figures. That's enough from the computer printouts. I had two pages that were typed, pages 7 and 8. I just picked out some selected data 1977 and 78, and also wanted to show you what was happening over a 10-year span to get some idea on trends. You see the number of joint returns, it's sort of the middle of the page here. You've had a shift in the mix. You're getting, as you probably suspect, more head of household returns, single returns, and not as many of the joint returns. Just composition of families are changing somewhat. You can see the changes in income from these tables. Median adjusted gross income for all returns was $9,700 in 77, $10,378. This year that jumped up 8.8% to $14,900. These are just miscellaneous statistics that may be of interest to you.
Ron,
that's enough.
Okay.
That's really.
We need to get something about the our books clear. We've had trouble in the past with. Trying to keep the information together for members because the member will get a document and say, well, I think I'll take that to my office and look that over. So they pull one page out. Then our staff has to go through and try to figure out what you took or what order you left them in. So probably the best thing would be for us to leave the information here, let it be put in our books, and then if you want to look at it, come down and get your book. Is that, don't you think that's the best?
Copy, we ought to copy it.
Well, but you would like, this is your copy for our file, the information that we're handed, isn't it?
No, I said the original was down in one page, which I couldn't advise that you missed.
Okay, well then what would you do with this paper? Would you just throw this away?
Oh, can we take it then?
So it hurts nothing for us to take it with us. That's clear. We can leave your folder, but you can take the information if you want to. We'll meet Monday at 1:30. Is there any problem with people on Monday? Is there anything going on that?
Probably.
Not much going on.
Yeah.
This is the best act in town.
Okay, we will meet then. Coffee, for those who want coffee, we've got a little kitty over there. The staff has started the thing rolling with a pound of coffee, so we're going to have a little fund there and a sustaining fund. If we run low, we'll bring it up. We're not going to vote on it because it'd probably be a split vote.
Is it coffee? Not decaf.
It's real coffee, isn't it?
Okay.
I drink decaf. Would the rest of you drink?
No.
I drink decaf.
I'll object and overrule everybody if it's decaf.
Yeah, if we can
I want regular coffee, drip grind.
I'll drink either one. I was just going to.